Yeah, absolutely. And that's a big part of why.
Maybe again, they're just me.
No, it's a lot because the board chairs a lot of people.
Yes, no.
That just needs to be respected.
No, no, no. Because this year it's different. Because if we want to get these big leads.
Hey, Dale.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. How are you? What small things? Like, because you know how it was like last year and the year before, like they didn't care what the assembly thought because we were doing.
I'm on time.
Now since.
I'm glad.
Last time.
No, I'm good for right now. Thank you. We're not asking anyone.
Well, yeah.
But then there's other stuff.
Yeah, they're extra stuff, but we want this extra stuff. We see undergrads want the extra stuff.
Yeah, but people are not willing to pay.
Well, that's right.
$10.
That's a great, that's a standard rate.
That sounds about right.
Well, when you pay like $72,000 in tuition and you don't understand how the funding model works, of course you're annoyed.
Yeah.
Like.
Or when they change funding model on you, it's better.
Oh, when tuition grows faster than inflation.
Like every year ever on record.
See, and then I want to send it to you today and I just cross checked. I guess I'll just send people this. I sent it to everyone. I didn't, but somebody, maybe Joe did. Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah. But
I still
you don't have it. Also, you said just in the PowerPoint and this one page.
And you've got this. We go back and forth. We live in Dryden.
You fixed it for me. Yay.
It's our house.
So I have to do it.
Yeah, I totally forgot about it. I mean, it's been like, what, 3-4 weeks since our last meeting? Two? Yeah. I'm always so used to, okay, essay got ours.
Kim's in-laws.
It's not just designed for undergrads, yeah. It's great.
Kim's parents, and now they're sort of like a crazy full house. Two cats, two dogs, my mom and dad, her friend.
They're doing well. How are you?
Like that.
What is that?
Really meeting with the organization that we'll discuss.
My brother graduated last year.
I do an appendix A with the GPSA and the University Administration.
You're driving me.
It's probably going to be right over here. Like one of the three houses.
Probably going to be more. No, it's going to be more.
I have a property with some intention in the office. Currently just living in an already built
totally
thing. But I was thinking about your house the other day.
So I take my
They're never going to be aware of the decision. I can invite them to be involved. But you're not going to get anything done in those meetings. You bring the documents to the committee.
Okay.
Or if you write it, you have to when they pass it.
Yeah.
But
thank you.
And again, that's going to be
nice to meet you.
That's where we are in the process.
No, not by
the
way.
That's right.
Well, SAFC process.
The committee's never been involved in engineering. It's always been the VP.
They can build SAFC commissioners.
I think it's going to grow a little bit more. You're going to get a new cast. The UA is a little different. We're less munchy.
They're not just, you know, pointing at the UA.
You're free to join the table. I just don't know what's the PowerPoint if you want to do. I mean, you're free to join the head of the table if you'd like.
I mean, where do you all want?
Well, traditionally, we're
guests towards the end of the table.
Well, then I'll put you there. I can say, hi, I'm Mary Beth.
Yeah, we don't like to meet you from our way.
Hello, how are you? Good to see you.
Do you want this recorded?
They're gonna contact and want her. Oh, Bob.
Bob is not here.
Sit down, actually. Thank you so much.
And we'll be left with those that I'll take back.
The one pager.
Somebody.
We can have that. You shouldn't just let all of these and kill them.
Right.
Oh, you told me. Yeah, that's your face. So I'm kind of feeling it's your special.
Try to
Kind of so bad.
That was great.
Yeah.
That's like, it's not a bad.
This is terrible.
Oh my god, I'm gonna get them from this.
It's weird in the morning, though.
Are you far of this? Yeah.
So excited, right?
Yeah.
And it has our name.
People would be surprised here.
The.
Right? I do have that one for the base.
No, that's.
When I was in Jay's house and I told him that I was looking at what I wanted is to go home. And they said, well, we don't have. And it's on the tour, it's like, gosh, I want to. Halloween.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at the ball when.
You played a part on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Thanks for all the help.
I don't think I know.
Yes.
Yeah, and then now there's like the pumpkin seeds down below.
Yes.
But maybe not as funny as the cow show. What else are you just getting? I'm allowed to have some.
Housing location as well, which is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Be careful because.
Great, great, exactly.
School year. My, I don't know, just like. I'm in the, yeah, it'll be out.
Because you care about it.
But that'll still.
Something is missing.
Yeah, specific. I'll be like that.
But I think that's kind of fucking.
It wasn't as high as I.
Bro, we are ready whenever you want.
I'm ready.
I'm just tired of how.
Water.
Really?
All the time, I'm just like, yeah, right, babe. Higher than. I've done them somehow. And higher than the online.
It would be really.
Wait.
The last time I went.
Yeah.
This one, you can live.
Of course. I can.
I'm new to that.
It's a.
I hope so.
The SAD amalgamation, it's the, it's like we, like, small ones, thousand things in all. So, but I think it's gonna be like a really good discussion, I think a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm saying you're one too.
Like, I think offer a lot of suggestions too, I can see that happening, so.
Want to.
We should have a.
Like, where are we on the agenda?
No. Yes.
You really do know how to.
Maneuver around.
They don't give you a, not a priority.
You open bar in there.
They give you a number, so I'm saying that one too.
I think floor is not a priority. Okay, I mean, not that I want it to.
You're right.
Floor is not a priority.
Again, yeah.
I didn't have the money, but my wife and I.
Relatively quiet.
I just wanted to make sure.
Of course.
This one is for sure a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's quiet.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
Yeah, it's 60%. And then chat this.
Nobody cares.
Okay.
We made it.
Was transportation.
That's also like.
This was less, that's what I'm saying.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Not for grads.
Noting that the time is 4:37. We have a quorum present. I'm calling this meeting of the University Assembly to order. First on our agenda is a call for late additions. Are there any late additions for the agenda? Hearing none. On to approval of minutes. First up is the minutes from our meeting from October 30th, 2018. Are there any comments, questions, concerns, or amendments for those minutes? Hearing none, there's no speakers list. The chair puts the question. Is there any dissent to approving the minutes as presented? Hearing none, the minutes of October 30th are approved by unanimous consent. Next are the minutes from our November 13th meeting. Given that these were simply very recently circulated, we're just going to talk about them generally and then ask to postpone them until the first meeting of spring semester. With that being said, are there any comments, questions, or concerns regarding our minutes from our meeting of November 13th, 2018? Hearing none, is there any dissent to postponing the approval of these minutes until our next meeting, which will be, I believe, in end of January or early February? Hearing none, these minutes are postponed until our next meeting. That brings us into our presentation of business today. We are very pleased to welcome Mary Beth Grant back to the University Assembly. For those who don't know, Mary Beth Grant is a former judicial administrator, so we used to see her every year. So please join me in welcoming her back. It's so good to have you.
Well, I appreciate it so much. So as Matt said, I used to be the judicial administrator for many years, but about 3 years ago, I moved over to the Dean of Students Office. And one of the tasks that I am working on this year is working with a group of very dedicated individuals, including Charlie and Joe. I think there's 13 of us all together. And we've been examining the work of the Greek judicial system. We call it the sorority and fraternity life system because they, not all of the chapters use Greek letters. And we're looking particularly at the work of what's called the chapter review board. And that is the board that tries to determine if there's an allegation of misconduct by one of the chapters, whether that chapter should remain on campus, whether there should be a sanction, have they violated something that's called the, help me with the name, what's that contract with the university, recognition contract. Sorry, senior moment. Recognition agreement. And that's the contract that the university has with the chapters to say, yeah, you're allowed to operate here. If you have violated that, if the current chapter review board finds that there's been a violation of that contract, then there could be consequences of educational nature or all the way up to being removed from campus. So we have a PowerPoint, but I don't know.
Yeah, but I was just having to check it out. Thank you, Terrell.
Thank you. So the purpose of being here today is to fill you all in on the work of the committee so far. The way that we're approaching it is that we're trying to figure out some changes that can be implemented immediately because the spring is often the time when there are more allegations of misconduct. But we also have some long-term ideas and questions, and we wanted to get input from this body as we're moving forward. So these slides were prepared by Chris Schaefer, who is the Associate Dean in the faculty. I wanted to make sure that we gave him credit. Next slide. This is the context. President Pollack wrote a letter on May 4th, may the 4th be with you, and that's where the original charge was. And this gives the structure. The president assigned Vice President Ryan Lombardi the job of putting together this committee. In the Office of Campus Community Engagement, which is sort of the sister organization to the Dean of Students Office, is the Office of Sorority and Fraternity Life. And that group has over 60 fraternities and sororities, three different councils. And that's the context. This is the composition of the committee. So I've been chairing it, and we have a combination of students, faculty, and staff administrators on the committee. We have a balance, almost half and half, of people who identify as having Greek affiliations and those of us who do not, to try and provide a wide range of points of view. This is what the current system looks like. If there's a complaint, any kind of complaint, to the Office of Sorority and Fraternity Life, the director of that office, whose name you may know is Kara Miller McCarty, she'll do a triage and decide which route to take. Some cases go to an informal resolution, which would be essentially a conversation, an educational conversation with the group that has been accused of misconduct, and maybe some sort of low-level educational response, but pretty informal. The types of cases that go to that are situations where the director determines there's really not enough information to go forward to an investigation. Maybe it's an anonymous allegation that there's no, nothing to substantiate it at all. Or maybe it's something that there's been an investigation and there's really not enough information to go forward to a panel to try to decide. And yet you want to make sure that you have some sort of educational intervention. So that's what, how an informal resolution is used. The Greek judicial board hearing would be for cases that are primarily event management types of cases. So maybe a chapter had a party that didn't have a sober monitor, or maybe they didn't register the party. And that's one of the ways that we try to keep people safe is to have registered parties, or maybe they went over the occupancy limit of their house. And the Greek judicial board is an all student board, and they handle things. And those, the types of referrals to that board are not, don't rise to the level of being either code violations or the type that would get a chapter kicked off campus or be a violation of the recognition policy. The area that has the dotted line around it is the area that our committee has been charged to take a look at. This is the chapter review board. And this is the entity, as I said, that tries to evaluate whether or not a chapter has violated the recognition policy, and if so, what's the appropriate response. Results of those hearings can be appealed, and right now they're appealed to Vice President Lombardi. So the committee has really quickly, as I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of variety of perspectives on the committee, but we pretty quickly came up with some core values that we all adhere to. One is that safety of community members is the first priority. Fundamental fairness is absolutely core to any process of accountability. Transparency is essential, so we want the whole community to know when there's been a violation that has resulted in a group having severe consequences. And we need to have this as an educational process, not a criminal justice process.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, of course.
What is the composition currently of this chapter review board?
It's a really good question, and it's one of the areas that that we have been struggling with as a gap in the way that the current system falls short. So the current procedures don't have a mandatory quorum, a mandatory number of people on the committee. By the explanation of some of the folks who work in the Office of Sorority and Fraternity Life, sometimes it's a little bit ad hoc, depending on the availability of people. And it's one of the things that we've identified on our list that that we are hoping to have as a quick change. There are students on the board, the four students, the vice president of judicial affairs from each of the tri-councils, which are Panhel, IFC, Interfraternity Council, and the Multicultural
Greek Council.
They changed the name. I keep getting the new name. What's the new name? Thank you. MGFC. And then also the president of whichever council is represented, part of the chapter that's being accused. So, but the rest of the board, you know, there could be, currently there could be people who've investigated the case could serve on the board, which as a former conduct officer doesn't feel completely fair to me. It could have people who are either Greek or not Greek, but could also be just sort of who's available. So that's one of the things that we see as a gap and that we can fix to make a fairer process.
So is it all students?
No, it's a mixture
of
students.
Okay, so that's
students.
What I was trying to figure out.
Yeah, it's students and staff. It currently does not have any faculty on it, though.
If you have any questions, we can take them now, but if you please raise your hand, I'll put your name on a speaker's list, and then we can do them now or at the end, whatever is the best for you.
It doesn't make any difference to me.
I can withhold.
Okay, that's okay. Not a problem, Dale. Do you want to go now?
I just wonder what document has all of these current guidelines for the chapter review board?
There's a, I don't remember what they call it, but there is a procedure document that is available to students online. It's not 100% detailed. There's a lot of practices that aren't reflected in the document.
And which part of the university approved that document?
I don't know.
But the president is now asking you to essentially look at a replacement for that.
Yes. Or examine it. I mean, our group is making a recommendation that the document be replaced, but the president didn't mandate that. She just asked us to review it.
Thank you.
Yeah. So these are some of the ways that, as we've examined all the different issues over the course of the semester, some of the things that we've identified that are not where the current system doesn't match the values that we've identified. First of all, we feel it's a complex system. There are different rules and procedures for each of the three different ways that a case can be triaged. We believe that there's a lack of fundamental fairness. It feels like there's an inequity regarding access to evidence, that chapters don't always have all of the same information that people on the board have, particularly if there's somebody who did an investigation and is sitting on the board. They might have more information than winds up in the report. And then I mentioned again, there are investigators on the board. And as I mentioned, the board is usually pretty ad hoc. We had concerns about the triaging. And it's not, and I want to make clear, and people have made this clear throughout our process, it's not that there's any distrust of the professionalism of the individuals who have held this office, Kara Miller, Travis Apgar, Susie Nelson, during the years, almost 20 years that I've been at Cornell. It's not a lack of confidence in their professionalism. It's just that there can be mistakes made and there can be a perception of problems and challenges. When we were reviewing different cases that went through the process, some people identified that there were descriptions of cases that went to the Greek Judicial Board that appeared pretty serious and that on the face of it looked like they should have gone to the chapter review board instead. So one of the suggestions that has come forward is let's have a double check on that triage system, have a couple of people look at that instead of just one. And then the fourth thing is there's just a lack of confidence right now in the system. And this is true both within the Greek community and outside of the Greek community. People are questioning the process, the appropriateness of the outcomes, and the transparency of both the process and the results. So these are some of the short-term but meaningful changes that we're putting forward for implementation in the spring. You'll notice that I did not use, or this slide does not use the word tweaks, which is the word that I was originally using, because as we were thinking about it, it's like, no, these are more than just tweaks. These actually will have a significant change in the fairness of the system. So first of all, to Dale's point, we feel that the procedures need to be written in a more clear fashion and have a little bit more detail, but really written in a way that is understandable to everyone, regardless of where they're coming from with an educational background and things like that. We want to make sure that review board panel members are recruited and trained rather than relying on an ad hoc process. We really feel strongly, maybe that's just me, I feel really strongly that investigators should not serve on the review board. They should maybe be available to ask questions if there's something about their report that doesn't make sense or the review board has questions, but they should not be serving on the board. Whatever one party gets, the other party should also get. So whoever is the chapter, representing the chapter, should receive the full investigative report. Many members on the committee have stated that while they agree with that, it's not that they're necessarily saying that there can't be a confidential witness, but if the board is not going to receive a name of a witness, then neither will the chapter and vice versa, so that everybody in the hearing will have the same information. And we want to make sure that there's public information of allegations and review board findings. This already exists, but they're working to improve this more. This technically is not something that our committee will work toward. You know, we're gonna be working on some of these other things, but it's so important, we just wanna restate it. The Office of Sorority and Fraternity Life is currently working on a scorecard. They had thought that it would already be available. And by scorecard, I mean information. They're doing a 5-year history about judicial things, as well as information about how much it costs to be in this particular chapter and how many people are in the chapter and what's the grade point average of the chapter, that kind of information that people who are considering entering the recruitment process, their parents or friends or colleagues might be interested in. So these are some questions that we have for you all. We have a lot of different things that we're throwing out there for long-term revisions beyond the spring. And so at this point, we want to make sure that we're asking the questions. So one of the structural things that we've thought of is that we think that it should be removed from the Office of Sorority and Fraternity Life to give them the opportunity to really focus on the educational and support functions that their office does without that that tension that either the students or the staff members might feel of also working on the conduct side. So any thoughts you have around that would be welcome. The membership of the committee is something, of the review board, is something that we're still trying to think about. So if anybody has any input about should it be all Greek members or a mixture of Greek and non-Greek, or does that matter at all as long as somebody is able to be unbiased and fair? What should the role of students be or faculty members on the board? And of students, did I already say that? I think I already said students. What should the role of other people be? So if somebody is, say, the victim of hazing or the victim of a sexual assault that takes place in a house, how should the harmed party be part of the hearing or not part of the hearing? Does it matter? For alumni and alumnae, what should their role be? There have been some suggestions that they might have divergent interests from the students in the chapter. Should there be an opportunity for them to talk about the protection of, say, their house and the financial components during the process, or the long-term history of the house separate from the students who have been perhaps misbehaving over the shorter term? Even if OSFL, the Office of Sorority and Fraternity Life, does not oversee the judicial or accountability process, are there other roles that they should be playing? For example, should they be an advisor to the board? Should they be enforcing the procedures? Should they be advising the chapters? What role should they have? And then for people who are advisors within the hearing, trying to give support to the chapters, what kind of role should those advisors have? And then the last question we would love to get some input from you all on is it appropriate, and under what conditions would it be appropriate to use alternative dispute resolution like mediation or restorative justice in this system? So any thoughts at all, we welcome. Charlie's going to take notes.
Thank you. So first, if anyone has any questions, please raise your hand or placard and I'll add it to the speakers list. First off, I just want to thank you for coming, as always. And also just notes for the assembly that the CJC is working up on hate speech and harassment. One of its recommendations was to bring the Greek system back under the code as a recommendation that was shared by the presidential task force. It is a recommendation as well. And I guess it's a little background on that. I mean, and from seeing a lot of where this is going, I personally would say is I think this is great. I think the Greek system right now is not great. But I think right now part of the problem is Cornell Essence has 5 university level judicial processes. We have Policy 6.4, we have the academic integrity processes, some colleges have honor code processes, we have the code of conduct, and we have this. So I guess a lot of what it was talked about at the working group, and I presume elsewhere earlier, was the idea of what is the need to duplicate this? In essence, a lot of what you're seeing here, actually I'd say almost 95% of it already exists in the code, with the ADR, hearing board membership, a fundamental fairness process, public records of information, an office that is well equipped to handle it. So I guess this for the assembly to know, and is also for its feedback, that's something that's come, that's been brought up to by numerous members of the community. And also just knowing the fact that if for essence, there's no need to reinvent, there might not be a need to reinvent the wheel in as much as the code does this. In essence, we're now taking so that students will be under the code. Most student orgs, 99% of student orgs are under the code. And again, if we're going to in essence bring this provision so close to what sounds like very similar to the code, why not just roll it all in? You harmonize it, and also even with the membership of the hearing boards, the nice thing is, if you were to say you are looking for the Greek system membership of the hearing boards there, people are going to self-select. Oh, I'm interested in the Greek system, whether pro or con, and join it. Whereas for the, if it's under the code, the hearing boards are for any case under the code, which means you're less likely to have people who are trying to shop their way into, oh, I have an axe to grind, or oh, I want to protect the Greek system, because it's a larger pool and your chance you wouldn't get it. But that's just something that's come up in conversations that have been brought forward to me, as well as formal recommendations. I have Richmond speakers list.
May I just offer a quick, so first I wanted to welcome Christina Liang, who is the Associate Judicial Administrator and also serves on this committee. And I'm really glad that you raised the issue about the code, because one of the things that's part of our charge is that we're thinking about what should happen now, but knowing that the code is under review by this body, we're being instructed not to do anything that might wind up being in contravention with what's ultimately decided. So so I think that there'll be sort of a pause at some point in with some of those recommendations. One recommendation that's before the body for long term, and there's another one that's coming forward on Friday that I don't understand as well yet, is to adopt a process that's more similar to the 6.4 process, which is less legalistic than the code process. So there's a couple of different ideas.
Absolutely. I can say, as chair of the assembly, I had conversations with the president and members of your office, actually, even so far as today, talking about where it all would fit and how it may go through, just because we have such a, and even 6.4, I mean, that the having these parallel processes, something that our working group saw, is a lot of confusion about what goes where, and if we can streamline that possible, it's something I think would be beneficial to the community. I have Richard on speaker's list.
So thank you for the presentation. It was very clear. At the Faculty Senate, it was last week, right?
Yeah.
2 weeks ago.
So we had a Chris gave a presentation. It's a slightly different set of slides.
This one's a little shorter. Yeah, I did it, adapted to slides.
And so, but one of the slides, one of the hearing board chairs noted, what Matt just noted, which was, like, this procedure that was on that slide looks a lot like the hearing board procedure, and so why are we duplicating it? So I'm echoing Matt on that. I do think that there's something about fundamental fairness that is not just isolated to the sorority and fraternities. That standards, for example, clear and convincing evidence and so forth, they should apply all students. We shouldn't have different standards for fraternities and sororities than we have for students otherwise. I think the only way, certainly the easiest way, to ensure that kind of fundamental fairness and equality before university law is to unify. So I really think that is where I would point. But boy, this notion of evidence that it would be different in the fraternities and sorority system than it would be for students outside of it, I find that really uncomfortable.
Can you elaborate on that a little?
Well, you say other ideas, for example, changing the standard of proof to clear and convincing evidence, that looks like it's up for debate, right?
Sure. So there's, as Matt said, there are a couple of different systems that we have. The Title IX system has preponderance of evidence. The current Greek judicial system has preponderance of the evidence, and the code has clear and convincing evidence. So I agree with you that it should all.
It's the code's clear and convincing evidence, and it shouldn't be. To my mind, looking at this, if you're interested in fundamental fairness, treating all students the same before the code and behavioral expectations and so forth, then you should have the same standard of evidence.
So you are expressing the opinion that it should be clear and convincing.
Yes.
Other people feel strongly that it should be preponderance of the evidence, and that's something we're going to be talking about on
right.
Friday.
But if you go that way, you know, preponderance of evidence, then you're setting up a different standard for behavior proof adjudication and so forth for students in the fraternity and sorority system than you are for the rest of the system. That looks to me like it's violating fundamental fairness.
Well, you all can change the code too. No, I was just giving you a hard time. But so, you know, your point is well taken that it's something that we need to talk about more and consider further. And the tensions are around what's done nationally and what's the best practices nationally compared to what's been traditionally done at Cornell. Under the code at Cornell, it's been clear and convincing evidence for that particular thing, the code of conduct. For other things, it's been preponderance of the evidence. For something like the one area that you didn't mention is athletics. They've got they've got their own process of holding people accountable, but they wouldn't even need to do preponderance because you know, it's more of a contract kind of thing. The national standard for conduct is preponderance of the evidence, and the body that Christina belongs to, that I used to belong to, which is called the Association, what's it called now?
Association for Student Conduct Administrators.
Thank you. They changed the name a couple of years ago to take judicial out, and I keep forgetting the new name. They very strongly recommend preponderance of the evidence, and others disagree. So it's something that we need further conversation.
But there are two separate issues, right? One is clear and convincing evidence versus preponderance. And the second issue is whether there should be different standards for fraternities and sororities than for the rest of the students.
Sure, sure.
So
that's right.
They're separate. They're separate issues.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And Richard, just for also context, academic integrity uses clear and convincing. I believe most of the honor codes, I believe law school uses clear and convincing. And it's the CJC and the UA have talked about it numerous times. There was the Cross report and other reports. Historically, the Assembly has been very pro keeping clear and convincing. That is obviously something that the Assembly is free to revisit at its pleasure, as well as the CJC. And also just something that has been brought up to me, as I said earlier, was people are saying, oh, a short-term fix in terms of getting the system, something that's not bad is good. Long-term, a lot of people, the committee and the Assembly, as I've heard from, are pro-code. And also just also that the Greek the Tri-Council presidents came to the Assembly last year and even said, we would like to be under the code. And there's a discussion that even if they were to be put under the code at clear and convincing, there's nothing that stops them from having their own internal, like the current internal system where they can have a preponderance and internally sanction or handle chapters internally if it doesn't rise to the level of code violation. So there is room to, in essence, bifurcate, say you're under the code, but internally the group chapters are free among themselves or through officer or someone else to say, you know, we want to hold ourselves to a higher standard. And then therefore they have their own palette of options there. Okay. I have Joe, Chris, and then Linda. Did I miss anyone? Okay. And then I have Dale. Joe, you're up.
It's been really confusing sitting on the committee, coming from a UA background and also understanding the Greek background really well, being a non-Greek member. I think the most confusing part when putting it under code of conduct, the UA would have another decision that the presidential task force said is, do we make this a student code of conduct? And so I think if we put the Greek judicial system under the code, I think there is an impetus to make this a student-only code of conduct because we're continuously only dealing with students on every issue. And I know that's a very divisive feeling on the UA. Would the UA even be a necessity if it's only a student code of conduct? What would be the purpose of having a lot of other constituencies involved in understanding the judicial system at Cornell? So I think that's been a really interesting challenge to try to navigate throughout and try to keep it away. And I think there is a really smart thing of keeping this in its own system because we look at also the culture of chapters where I don't necessarily, that sometimes policy 6.4 plays into, and the Office of Judicial Administration, OJA, doesn't always get the same 6.4. There's a lot of it's a weird nuance that I'm not comfortable in saying after talking to alumni on it, because if you talk to the alumni part of the committee, they would be, I would make the assumption not wanting to speak for them, but saying this might not be the best thing to put it under the campus code of conduct, of listening to some of their experiences with it pre, I think Michelle, like long time ago. I mean, they all have different experiences, but I think there's a lot to really dissect there of the relationship that the Greek system has had with the OJA. Speaking that the OJA still can go with individualized members of Greek, but not the full chapter. And so I think it's not as simple as saying you're under the code and all that stuff and it's going to change how this works. I think there would be a lot of differences in opinion looking at it. We talked about it briefly at the beginning, the first meeting we ever had of the committee, and there's a lot of, it's iffy. The committee is really iffy on it. The students, the faculty, I mean, it's a very different opinion. So I'm not going to say that it's a perfect solution to put it on the campus code of conduct. And also, you do have the difference between preponderance of the evidence and clear and convincing. And I think, I mean, preponderance is what we use for 6.4. It might change. Who knows? Clear and convincing has come under scrutiny by the community that the UA has sometimes thought of. So I do think that there needs to be a challenging. If we're looking at the Greek system, we should challenge and look at the whole systems. And possibly there is no right answer that one system is getting it right. It might be that the collection of the three systems, the three big ones, are finding good parts. And we would have to make a whole new system that combines the three systems of the best parts.
Thank you, Joe. I know there's been a lot of discussion about hybridizing, but I think that reflects that. I have Chris, Linda, Dale, Richard, and T. So Chris, you're up.
Hi, thanks. So this is all brand new to me as an employee and hearing these things, and a lot of what you guys said about consolidation, to me, it's like the rules for everyone are like the rules and making it simple. I was wondering if the reason that the Greek system exists is, does it have some special function of like a member of a Greek entity has some kind of situation, but now the whole entity has to respond to it in a way. So it's like now there's an alcohol incident, let's say, for example, but the whole entity has to now go to some kind of a thing, as opposed to in normal JA, it's very individualized. Can you explain if that is sort of the way that that works or why?
I'm happy to, but I wonder if Christina, you might want to.
Sure. So under the code of conduct, we of course have jurisdiction over student organizations that are non-Greek. And so if there was an organization found responsible for, say, hypothetically, an alcohol violation, there would be group a sanction that is tailored where the entire group would do something. And so it may not be like the entire organization goes and completes alcohol education at Cornell Health, right? Logistically, that wouldn't work. But if, for example, the underlying motivation for the alcohol violation was social bonding, right? That was the motivation. They wanted to create an activity where everybody was getting to know one another, bonding. Then perhaps a valuable educational sanction would be to talk about brainstorming different ideas for social bonding that did not involve alcohol. And then the additional component could be, you know, the risks of consumption, right? And so that would be something that I just think off the top of my head might be more appropriate for a group. But I think that's a very specific example to talk about how we adjudicate group cases and individual cases differently. But I don't know that that answers your question of are Greek organizations like special or add something kind of different compared to student organizations that are not Greek.
Yeah, I think that helps me understand this a little bit better. And I guess another in the realm is, you know, being a student at a university, you sort of have some quasi insulation from the normal rules of the rest of the state, let's say. Not exactly, depending on the thing, but you got like one of those, like, you messed up, you're now have to pay for it, and you're going to do it. Does the fact that we have so many systems, it seems like it potentially gets inequitable to people and students who can't be a part of these other organizations that are now two or three councils away from like the ultimate thing. So it's like trying to even the playing field with a code of, code consolidation that it's equal for everybody. Because it's, if I keep thinking about like union employees versus like other employees or what it's like to be a faculty versus, there seems like, depending on who you belong to, at some point, like the buck stops way before it gets to whoever the actual potential, I guess, you know, violators, maybe not the right one. That's sort of what I was trying to like figure out. I think you guys helped explain that a little bit.
Oh, just a quick comment to respond to. I think what I've actually noticed is like as a non-Greek member, I'm only really under the campus code of conduct, but for Greek individuals, they're under the code of conduct and this Greek system. And there are like there's a list of like 10 or so, like, what we expect of Greek members that they don't enforce, but it's just like, here's what it's like to be, here's what you should embody as a Greek member of Cornell. So I would say there's actually more responsibilities on a Greek member at Cornell to follow more sets of rules than there is a non-Greek member.
Yeah, definitely, that's true.
Thank you. Also, Chris, you asked, the part of the distinction about Greek versus non-Greek is there my understanding is there's a Board of Trustees resolution that moved the Greek, again, it's a recognition contract, so they're not, as opposed to the chess club or something else, which is Michelle's, for example, they're a university registered organization. And therefore they're under the code. The Greek system is university recognized, and therefore they are set aside from the code based on the board's direct action. I mean, as Christina mentioned, for the OJA does handle student org, they can have an educational sanction, such as decision-making or et cetera, but they also can go all the way up to expulsion or dismissal. So for instance, something like Q's Waiters, which was dismissed, I want to say 2 years ago, and that decision is public. So, I mean, I'd be happy to share that with you. So there is, the OJA system does handle student orgs and does handle, unfortunately, that those orgs do hate. And the S is a lot of things you do see or you might see from the Greek system already exist in certain ways through the code. Maybe for my file for context.
Thanks.
I have Linda. Thanks.
Yeah, just being a parent of someone who's been in Greek life, you know, I quickly surveyed her, and she's been, you know, at the head of the thing, and it seems to me that the biggest thing I've heard over the last 4 years listening to all of this is there's a lack of transparency, so that when this chapter review board makes a ruling, how does that ruling get communicated to the chapter? What was the evidence? Like, it doesn't seem to happen at all. And so therefore there is no education happening, because they don't know what the decision was, they don't know why it was made, they don't understand what the recourse is and why they're being asked. So whatever you choose, whatever rules you choose, whatever code, it needs to be transparent so that the people who are impacted by the decision know why the decision was made and what the consequences and why. And I mean, that just is utterly lacking. And that to me is, how does that work? If you're being punished, but you're not exactly sure. Yeah.
I think it's a really good point, and it's a point that the committee has made a lot. And I think, Charlie, you've been one of the biggest proponents of transparency. And there's so many levels of transparency, right? So there's transparency at the hearing and during the whole investigation process and at the hearing process. There's the transparency between the people at the hearing, you know, making sure that the accused chapter and the board have the same information. And you're raising another level of transparency, that once whatever has happened to the chapter, that the individual members, who aren't all going to be at the hearing, that they have some understanding. And I think that that's a role that OSFL can definitely play, of you know, helping the chapter, and the alums could actually play this role as well, of, you know, y'all are subjected to these sanctions, and here's why, how are we going to grow and learn from this and collectively be stronger and better as a result of this. So I think that's a very good point.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, like Joe was saying, the internal culture in many cases is very secretive about this type of thing. And so if it rises to this level of the chapter review board, it seems to me that's the place where you would start from. Okay, you know, this is clearly not okay. Here's what happened. Here's what the consequences. And then do the education through whatever the sanction is, because it's just not clear. And I think that's where the mistrust comes in. Even the members themselves, they don't understand. So, yeah.
Thank you. Next is Dale.
Yeah, thank you for presenting to us. I had a kind of a question, and a small question and a long question. The first question is, what's the timeline for this committee? We'll be meeting again next semester. Is this the final set of recommendations, or will the committee be doing more of the on-the-ground work of writing these new procedures?
It's a really good question. I'm trying to figure that out myself.
Okay.
So here's what I know. I know that I feel really strongly that we should have something finished by the end of this semester, so that the implementation for the spring can take place. The way that I'm trying to organize the report is short-term recommendations, long-term recommendations. I don't know how complete the long-term recommendations are going to be at the end well, we'll say December 20th when I leave town. This is the deadline, right? But I really feel like we're, we've already identified some of the short-term things, and it's more the implementation stuff. So I don't know how much this committee will implement by December 20th, or how much that will go to other people. For the long-term recommendations, we have two more meetings this semester. And I think where we are with the long-term recommendations is going to inform the rest of that question, Dale. If in the next two meetings, you know, people are like, yeah, we really think that this idea that person X came forward is the long-term recommendation for the structure, or this other recommendation that person Y put forward, that should be the way that we go. If we're already at that point, you know, then maybe our recommendation part for the long term is done, you know, with a list of questions of, hey, all of these things need to be looked at further, but why don't y'all wait until the code stuff is figured out? I mean, I don't know, I'm just speculating. Or it could be that that we say we don't think our work is done, and here's the short-term recommendations. Y'all get started on that, and we'll pick up where we left off in the spring. You know, our the biggest part of our charge is that our due date is the spring, and that there's sort of that sense of don't step on the code review.
I guess for us, it's a little bit difficult to look at the timeline and figure out how it's supposed to work, because it's hard to say whether or not your committee's review or the work are going to be doing on the code of conduct. Neither is really the cart nor the horse.
I think that's exactly right.
I think it's really difficult to collaborate when members of this assembly don't fully understand the code and definitely don't understand the OFSL judicial process. And while it's great that Joe and Charlie are able to be part of that process, they obviously don't have the exact same views and knowledge of the code of everyone else in the assembly and everyone on the codes and judicial committee. And I wish there was a better way to have the conversation other than this meeting, which is great. Just maybe another conversation with all the members of the CJC and this assembly and the Judicial Review Committee about how to move forward. And I think it's a little late for that. I feel like that conversation would have been better a month or two ago. Kind of like a learning process where we can have a discussion of, like, what does that mean? What is clear and convincing? What is preponderance? What does the code of conduct do? What would this change being made, what would the outcome of that be?
Yeah.
And when would that collaboration have to happen? And I'm still not even clear when that collaboration would need to happen.
All your points are really well taken. And we, as a committee, talked about when is the best time for us to reach out to the different assemblies. And we felt like if we came here too prematurely before we really had a sense, we've only been meeting for 2 months. I think our first meeting was September 28th. Not that I'm counting, but we, you know, we needed to make sure that we had something to give y'all instead of just coming with a, hey, we're going to be doing this, what you're doing. So it is a little bit of chicken and egg, cart, horse. Those are really good analogies. So this is what we did. So yeah, but whether or not the committee continues to exist, I think the members of the committee are super dedicated to positive outcomes. And I know I'll speak for myself. If there are ways that I can contribute to those conversations, whether or not the committee still exists, I'm happy to participate.
And would the committee members be open to coming, you know, before the assembly or the CJC more in a discussion capacity to kind of educate us on what these other processes are in the Greek judicial process?
I don't feel like I can speak for people, but I'm sure. I mean,
it'd be okay to reach out to them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it, I mean, you all are on the committee. Can you think of anybody who doesn't love to speak and would?
And Dale, I'm also happy to follow up in terms of just trying to facilitate that. As I've said, talking with the president and everyone else, the UA wants to work collaboratively, whether that be through this process or whatever process they're trying. Because I think you said it perfectly. Everyone wants to get to a system where it works, whatever that may be. And that's why the idea is to be collaborative. That's why we're appreciative to have you here. But I am happy to follow up. We can talk offline with who we can talk to try and make sure that things go smoothly, because conversations are happening, but we should definitely ensure that you and the CDC and the assembly are kept in the loop. I have Richard, T, Ashwin, Jeff, and Imani.
So one of the things CJC actually has talked a little bit about the fraternities and sororities and about the problem of assigning collective and individual responsibility. Mm-hmm. And one of the problems actually was one that Joe was talking about implicitly, is that the fraternity and sorority culture is secretive. So it's hard to reach individual responsibility. And bringing it under the code and separating that out would be a good thing to do. The president of a fraternity should be responsible for a hazing procedure if it is adopted by a fraternity, should be individually responsible. The only way to reach into the fraternity and evade some of the secretive ways and practices and abuses is in fact to make individual responsibility work. So I actually think that respect or deference to fraternity culture is, yeah, in many cases, a bad idea, not a good idea.
Kind of chime in here. So Chris Schaefer had this following interesting idea. So instead of, suppose there's real bad behavior, and we have to figure out whether it's individual or chapter. The way it is now, the prosecutor would have to prove, you know, if it's an individual, they would have to make a case that it's chapter. Turn it around. The default is it's chapter unless you can prove through suitable educational programs and a whole run up to the event that it was individual. So it puts the onus of the proof on the chapter. And that would torque things. In other words, you would know that it would prompt you to be more careful about educating your members to things like hazing. So.
Thank you. Next is T.
So I like 100% agree with that. And that was actually the first point that I was gonna raise, because you had asked the question about the relationship between the Greek organization as an entity and then the individual party. And there wasn't really a conversation about how those are distinguished entirely. So I think that's an excellent segue. I'm not really gonna say much about it because, you know, that was all I was gonna ask. And then the second thing was just to follow up on a couple of points of conversation that have already been brought up by various members. So I know, Richard, you were talking about the idea of clear and convincing evidence and why that should be homogenized and it should be the system for Greek life. Just off the top of my head, thinking about what's the alternative? It's
preponderance.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so just off the top of my head, the function that I would immediately ascribe to that is that Greek life is a very intimate setting, and the, I guess the people who would otherwise constitute witnesses for an event are very socially connected, and so they don't necessarily have the same objectivity as, you know, witnesses in other kinds of situations. And so, for instance, like sexual assault, which is such a problem with the Greek system, if the standard for that was clear and convincing, like, we would have almost no cases prosecuted, like, effectively, if we're being honest, because, like, how, you know, that burden of proof is very excessive. So I feel like it is because of the different context that the Greek life promotes. So I would see you know, a very, very strong argument for that bifurcation. And so I do also, and this is to your point, Joe, kind of switching gears now, I do support incorporating Greek life under the code. I don't see why that would make it a student code. I don't, like, I mean, they were already technically there. Like, each individual student in the Greek life organizations were already under the code, but now we're just putting the Greek life organizations also under the code. I don't see why that should be a stretch that should make it now an overwhelmingly student code and have us lose jurisdiction. I feel like it's fine. We can put them under, like, have the evidence be different because of the different context and still have it be a consolidated code and still have, like, faculty and staff and like provisions. I don't see why not? And I think there's like a third thing that I was gonna say, but I can't remember.
I can come back to if you'd like to.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Okay, next I have Ashwin, Jeff, and Mani, and then I put you back on. So, Ashwin.
So with like kind of changing this, that kind of puts more importance on like triaging and how to determine which board it would go to a certain case. So I'm wondering, like, what flexibility or what possibility for change or increase in transparency is possible at that level. So, like, improving how decisions are made as to which board to go to, because it seems like depending on which board you go to, you're going to have varying forms of either decision-making or sanctions that are posed against that. And I think that has a really big implication on the actual outcome for the members. So I'm curious if there are any possible changes to that segment of it.
Yeah, that's a really important section that we need more discussion about. Charlie has raised it a couple of times, and we have it specifically on our agenda for Friday. Some of the ideas that have been raised so far, and again, this is just in the spirit of sharing what we're talking about, but not having reached consensus and ideas yet. One idea is to, Charlie, I'm going to quote you right now, have every decision-making point have more than one person involved. So, and again, it's not that we don't trust the professionalism of anybody involved, but we just want to make sure there's a double check on that. So that's one idea, that even at the triage section, maybe it would, you know, be put somebody who's on the board, like a board chair in the Office of Judicial Administrator. There are different times when Christina and her colleagues will contact a board chair for approval of certain types of agreements. So something like that could be mimicked. One of the proposals that's come forward is to actually not have an administrator make that decision about the triage, but have it more at the investigator level. So have an investigator take a look at it and say, yeah, there's really no code violation or no recognition policy implicated. It's really just the event management. So we'll send that to the Greek board. So it's somebody that's viewed as a little bit more independent. So there's a couple of different ideas that we're bending about. If you have any, you know, we welcome any ideas that you may have.
Hey, actually, Anna, you may also, as you know, there's the code has an order, you have an order to show cause. For instance, if for some reason a group, the J, were to decline to file a charge against an individual, the victim could, in essence, petition a hearing board to take a second look, as in essence, as a check on the process. The code already has that procedure. Actually, Michelle speaks quite highly of it. So something that if it were to broaden the code, that would be incorporated, but also in terms of ideas for a check and a balance, that is something that the code uses, and you've worked under it for many years, so I'm sure you're familiar with it, but it's something you may wish to consider.
Yeah. You know, I think that it is something we can consider, but as Joe said earlier, some of the particular aspects of Greek culture and the types of cases that are referred might make it less effective. So for example, in hazing cases, it's really hard to get people to come forward at all. So having them both come forward and then double come forward, it may not work quite as well as it does under the code. It's not that it's not worth considering, but that's something that comes to mind.
Yeah. And I mean, that means that hazing does happen with other organizations as well.
Yes, of course.
So I have Jeff, Amani, and then T. If we can go back to you, if you could. Has your third point come to you?
Oh, yeah. So I remembered my third point. Thank you. Do you want me to speak on it?
Sure, why not?
I guess this last slide, you were asking for like recommendations and whatnot. So I think I did have some recommendations. On the question of should non-Greek community, so this is now under the impression that we don't follow through with the consolidation of this Greek life underneath the code, which I support, but if we don't, then definitely non-Greek community members should be part of the decision-making body. Alumni, I feel like the role of alumni is important, but should not be overemphasized, because I think it, and it also has been expressed before in this meeting, that they do have a lot of the alumni that would be interested in this kind of board, especially to Matt's earlier point, are self-selected and are, you know, probably very invested in the Greek system. So honestly, I feel like minimize the role of alumni to the best of our ability. I don't know if this is what you were expecting, but like,
no,
you said you wanted to.
We can take, you know, we told folks that we're going to reach out to all the assemblies and bring back the feedback. So this is exactly what we need.
Right. And then on the penultimate point, I kind of had like a conflict in my head. So I see this alternative dispute resolution as obviously it's, you know, it's something that could be seen in tension with justice potentially, because if like a victim/survivor of any of these kinds of violations feels pressured to go for mediation rather than, you know, very hard action that could be problematic, but also like now putting, like I'm immediately inclined to say alternative dispute resolution should be undertaken when the victim approves of it.
Absolutely.
However, that now puts the victim in an odd position where they might be getting all of these messages from different people on social media, like you better, you know, sign up for mediation or this and that. So it's, I was just going to introduce that as a complexity that immediately jumped out at me. So I don't have a solution explicitly, but I feel like the victim should have a role in decision making, like concerning that. But I also see how that could be problematic. So and other people can think about it.
Good points.
Of course, and also just the current code moving towards ADR has some safeguards. 6.4 talks about ADR, and they're actually 6.4 has extensive safeguards in terms of to try and prevent exactly what you just said, so that you're not having people pushed into it. The codes, the ADR under the code is primarily, the last year was towards stealing from the apparel store, things where the university is the complainant. That being said, as it's moved, my understanding is it's moving towards ADR, using the code for where it's someone assaulted, just generic assaulted someone else, that there would also be protections in terms to ensure that you're not having people shoved into something where they don't want to or they don't think it's best for them. I have Jeff and then Imani.
Great talk again. Just kind of clarifying on that training process, right, for the review board members as part of the short-term goals. I assume that in context of this, then people like those who facilitate the triage would also have some retraining, reprogramming. And I assume also, to some extent, the group judicial board as well, right, because I think it's important for all these individual groups to understand where their role is. And understanding that in certain situations and these guidelines that you've now set or hopefully are setting, that they fit that specific position that is given, whatever case that's given to them, in a way that's a little bit more obvious, I think. I think the idea is to avoid these gray scenarios where you're not sure where it's going. And I think establishing these new guidelines is really helpful for that. One thing I wanted to ask also was kind of in with what he was talking about was these EDRs is, I think from another perspective, is how this might impact people perceiving the case. In a sense that if in a situation where some people might believe that EDR is not the right choice, that maybe it's a lighter consequence than it should be, then from the outside looking in, it might look like a slap on the wrist as opposed to something that's meant to be there. So I only bring that up because this could potentially be a concern when you're trying to look at what are the possible resolutions if you give multiple options as opposed to maybe very few specific ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think ADR is a pretty complicated concept, and the things that the two of you have raised are among some of the challenges with it. The types of things that committee members have raised is that ADR might be appropriate in some cases, but not maybe the most serious cases. One of the things I was thinking about is that it's not mutually inconsistent to have a really harsh sanction, and excuse my language around that, but you know, like it might be appropriate to have a very serious sanction and the harmed party might still need to have some, there might need to be some repair to the harmed party so that they're not necessarily mutually inconsistent. We definitely want more discussion about this. The committee was sort of split on, some people were like, yeah, ADR sounds great. And other people were like, I'd like to explore this more and understand how it could work in a group context. Nobody said, no, we shouldn't even talk about it, but we're not in the position yet where we're ready to make a recommendation.
Just follow up on that. I think that's a good point to bring up, is that I think in other cases of ADR, it's oftentimes for the individual, right, in that case. But I think it's another question now, if you're talking about an organization, chapters of code, they go through that, or is it back to that individual versus organization responsibility, like, where does that fall? That's tricky.
Yeah.
So I have Amani and then Joe. And it is actually a quick point in the ADR. Technically, and this has been raised before, and some issue where technically this whole process is ADR. Because if God forbid there is sexual assault or you steal something, the traditional dispute resolution is to go to court and go to the city court. So I mean the code 6.4, the Greek process, these are all technically ADR because they're not your typical legal dispute resolution. But I think in this case it's really looking towards mediation and restorative justice as opposed to more of a traditional adjudicatory quasi medicine's more of an adversarial process.
Oh, we're not necessarily looking at an adversarial process, we're looking at an educational process.
Well, yes, and yes, yeah. In terms of trying to separate this as more of an educational mediation.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Zamani and Jeff.
I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the benefits of removing the chapter kind of cases from Office of Sorority and Fraternity Life. And if by removing those cases, would it create a disconnect between the chapter and the office, and because of the relationships that are built between the people in that office and the chapter members, would it make it harder to, in terms of to adjudicate cases, in terms of people coming forward and people being opened to maybe not necessarily admit, you know, but to be a little more open and honest, because now they don't have those relationships with the office who would probably hear or be a part of those conduct cases, if that makes sense.
Does anybody else want to take it? I don't mind taking it, but I don't want to hog the floor. One of you want to? Okay. So the idea that people have expressed is to actually improve the relationships between sorority and fraternity life staff and the chapters by not putting that group in this position of, we are the main advocates for Greek life on campus. And if you mess up, we're gonna get you. I mean, that's a gross exaggeration of how they would say it. Don't put it like that in the minutes. but you know, we don't want to have people feeling like, do I trust these people? Because to have students thinking, do I trust them because they're the biggest advocates for me on campus, or are they, you know, essentially going to be out to get me and kick me off campus? So we're actually hoping that it will improve the relationships and put the Office of Sorority and Fraternity Life in a position where they've got greater capacity for the prevention work, the education work, the leadership work, as well as all of the relationships that they have with alumni. One of the things we haven't discussed, I don't know if I should speculate out loud. I don't know if this is actually an issue or not, but I'll just put it out there. In the same way that the Office of the Judicial Administrator is not subjected to political influence because of its independence, it might also give a little bit of separation from any influence that alumni might have, because also, you know, does fundraising with alumni, for example. I don't know if that's actually a concern or not, but there could certainly be the perception, even if it's not an actual concern.
If I can piggyback off of that, is that logistically, right now, the J's office and OSFL, we do joint investigations sometimes, just because there can be situations where there are individual respondents as well as an organization. And I can tell you that joint investigations are very time consuming. So just from a logistical standpoint, is if OSFL staff were pulled from investigations, they would have a lot more time on their hands to do a lot of the proactive preventative education programming that is their primary role, right? The OJA's primary role is to investigate, right? And so I think if we were to look at a division of labor and kind of like a, what I'm envisioning is a pie chart for how much time is being spent at different aspects of a person's job description, I think it might be disproportionate for OSFL right now to be involved in a lot of the investigations.
Thank you. Next is Joe.
So I'm gonna touch on 2 points. First, a concept of a student code of conduct, which is something, again, the presidential task force said that was a recommendation. I think putting Greek life under the code would create more pressure on the university assembly
to transfer it to the student code of conduct. Not saying I agree or disagree with that statement. I think that would create a larger conversation that this body would need to look at, and that this body would also have to look at representation on it to make sure that it's an equitable process of creating a student code of conduct and maintaining a student code of conduct. So I think that it should be a long-term consideration that members of the university assembly should be considering when thinking of it. Not saying I agree with that. In fact, I probably disagree with that idea more so than I agree with it. But I think looking at that, would we have, that was one of the questions alumni had, were the Greek members on the Coaching Judicial Committee, how many students are on it? Are there Greek members of the UA? How it's ensuring of proper representation for the student body on itself, on these bodies that would make the decisions for the Greek system. So I think there would be pressure that we would have to look to respond to. Again, disagreeing that it should be a student code of conduct. My second point is on the concept of individual versus organization and responsibilities where they lie. Well, this came up when, if you're a chapter president or chapter pledge master, chapter new member educator, what role of it as an individual do you play, and what role representing the organization do you play? And so I think then we have to really look at, when it is the organization that is at fault, how do we engage proactively in education so that we're actually solving an issue instead of just kicking them off of campus, putting them in an annex in College Town, and having another situation balloon out of proportion? And so I think that's a special consideration that needs to be considered, and that's why I think this process does really well of understanding who's actually the playmakers in the chapter that are calling the shots, that are saying this is the tradition that we upkeep, because there are many cases where hazing doesn't occur within the first year when you're a new member. It occurs within your second year when you're already into it, and I think sometimes that is individual chapter traditions kind of govern different ways that chapters need to be treated throughout this process, that you can't just provide the blanket statement. But I think this current system as it stands does better than the code of conduct. And if a conversation for a long term, the code of conduct and this would have to find ways to alleviate a difference in differences of what it looks like. I think the one other argument that comes up all the time is in the chapter, the amount of money and property and assets that the chapter holds, what happens next. It's not a conversation I like to entertain at the committee, but nevertheless, it's a conversation that comes up that other organizations sometimes don't have. So registered organizations aren't necessarily owning mansions. Their alumni association is not necessarily owning mansions, but in the Greek system, that is true. Alumni associations do own the mansions. And so what happens after that if a recognition policy? And I think that's something that, you know, is a conversation we need to have. It shouldn't affect the adjudication process of cases, but it's a conversation we should have post-adjudication of processes that the code, I don't think, is equipped to handle at the current moment.
Thank you. That exhausts your dual CSs just for the assembly system, the composition. The CJC this year and last year as well tilts heavily students, tilts also heavily undergraduates, is the largest group on there. In terms of our Greek on there, I mean, I would just say, I don't know who's Greek on it in CJC, but I do know that no other constituency, whether that be student org or athletic or something, has a concern over where they fit in terms of do they have a certain number of seats. And I think it's also maybe why a hybrid approach may be something that's worth exploring. That being said, I don't have anyone else on the speakers list. Are there anyone else who'd like to make a final remark before we wrap it up? Monty?
I have a question about investigations. I've done an investigation. I know it's very long and very time consuming. And with the removal of staff from OS, FFL also, then who would, then would just other staff members be tapped, or would there be like an expansion in Jay's office if it went that route?
Every recommendation has staffing implications, and this committee won't be making that decision. I mean, that's above our pay grades.
In terms of on JA staffing, As Michelle mentioned previously, this past year, the OJA saw about a 20% increase in the number of cases they handled. I have actually set a meeting with her. I've been speaking with her about how the UA, we can talk about getting potentially more resources, whether that be either AJ, Associate Digital Administrator, or other ways to try and ensure that they are adequately staffed to handle what they currently have. And if the code takes a larger role in the Greek system, also how to ensure that that staffing is adequate, so we're not necessarily overloading or overwhelming the people who already work quite so hard. Dale.
Who should we be directing those staffing concerns to in terms of the decisions that we're going to be making and your committee is going to be making since they all have staffing implications, should those be part of our considerations? And I guess that's a question to yourself, to MB, anybody who wants to answer that. Because we've had that question in the CJC, and of course I've asked the JA, and that's not something that she's qualified to answer either.
Yeah. It's a really good question. I know that what we'll be doing is making the recommendations, and I guess what I don't know is it Martha, is it Ryan, who is it that actually takes those recommendations and decides, yep, yeah, we're picking that one, we're not going with that one. If we pick this one, we need two more people, this one we only need one more person.
I think it's a good thing, but our discussions have been entirely like based on the ethics of the decisions we're making. What's the best process in terms of fairness? What's the best process in terms of efficiency? And none of them have been what's the best process in terms of how many people are going to need to be employed in each of these offices.
Yeah. We haven't broached that at all on our committee.
I will say, in terms of procedurally, because of the way the OJA is situated, the UA traditionally is the advocate for it. I mean, similar with the Office of the Ombudsman, when they have staffing concerns and else, we are the ones who will try to put it forward. As I said, I've spoken to Michelle about it. In conversations with the president and her staff, I have talked about resources. As I've said before, the president has pledged resources to help us with our evaluation of the code, and also understand that some of the recommendations she has made do have staff implications. And again, she's aware of that. And obviously, once it gets closer to what we're actually shaking down between path A, path B, then that discussion may come more into the forefront. But I think right now, my understanding is the idea is to try and find the best system for the community overall. And then after that, we start looking at once we think, okay, this is the best, then we can start looking at the nuts and the bolts. And that's a conversation that will come up then, and also with this assembly, as well as the administration and the president's office. Anyone else have anything else to add? Hearing none, please join me in thanking Mary Beth Grant again.
My colleagues.
Of course. Wonderful seeing you again, Mary Beth. Welcome back to the UA for our short time. We look forward to working with you.
Thank you.
Have a good one. And I don't see you. Have a great holiday.
Oh, thanks so much. If anyone does not want to keep the handout, I'll take it and recycle it and use it at one of the later meetings.
Thank you so much.
Pile somewhere.
Thank you. And thank you, Christina. Moving back into our agenda, we come up with assembly committee and liaison reports. We have about 10 minutes or so left in the meeting, so we're going to go through these in a relatively abbreviated fashion, even though it is our second meeting for the month. So for assemblies, does the employee assembly, student assembly, graduate professional student assembly, or faculty senate have anything they would wish to report that I think is important to bring forward for the assembly? Hearing none, we'll move on to our committees. I will say, actually, this Bob Howard, the chair of CIC, can't make it, but he is also the CIC will be holding its first meeting tomorrow and is intending to hold another meeting next week to try and get operational. Are there any, does T or Dale have anything to add for CIC or for CWC or CJC?
My only update is that we'll be meeting tomorrow at 4:45 to 6. If you're interested in hearing the assignments, we're going to be giving our committee members as we go into the area between the semesters. You're welcome. You're, of course, always welcome to come.
Fantastic.
Now there's a question.
Oh, great.
Did you guys get staffed correctly yet?
I still believe I have not heard anything from the employee assembly or Craig about filling the final employee seat, but that might also want to hold off until we'll do another evaluation with the committee members to see when we're going to meet next semester, because we can change the meeting time. I don't know if that would make it better or worse for employees, or if you would want to pick somebody first who would want to be part of that discussion, but that might also be a factor.
Thanks.
I just say I spoke to Craig earlier today on the phone in terms of staffing and other things, so I can put you in. We can talk about that offline to get that squared away.
And I know he's been doing his best to reach out to employee assembly members.
Just as an addendum, so for the CWC, we're also missing an EAC, so if you could communicate that as well, fabulous.
Thank you, Dale. I'll make a note.
Did we staff T seat on the CJC?
Yes, that would be Dietrich.
Okay.
Any other questions for committee updates? Hearing none, we move into liaison reports. Anything regarding liaison reports? I will say, actually, on behalf of the UA, I attended the Student Health Benefits Advisory Committee meeting, I want to say 2 weeks ago, I believe it was the last full week before Thanksgiving. They spoke about various various funding models in terms of raising the health fee by about 10% and how that will affect services moving forward with the growth of enrollment. Additionally, various alternatives for that they could prioritize and the corresponding costs, whether that be opening on Sunday, having transportation, investing in telemedicine, having more preventative care in terms of trying to create a more healthy academic environment just for stress and well-being, as well as, of course, hiring more counselors. I believe the SA and GBSA sent out a survey on that, and the committee is meeting this Friday to talk about that more detail. But that being said, are there any updates from our other liaisons?
So the policy advisory group talked about some updates to university policy 5.4.2 on reporting electronic security incidents. I can send everyone a copy of that.
Thank you. Any questions for student health benefits or the PAG? Hearing none, that does exhaust our agenda. Any final remarks or comments from anyone? Hearing none, the time is 5:55. Being this is our last meeting of the semester, I want to thank everyone for a good semester so far. We have one more semester of the term. I also want to wish you, no matter what you celebrate, whether that be Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, Festivus, or anything else, a very blessed, a very safe and happy holiday season. So thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Yeah, so basically it would be the same thing as what Iowa State does. If someone doesn't push their way up for 75 months or so.
Yeah, thank you, Joe.
Thank you. So, the reason that.
So there's like the end of the day punishment have jurisdiction. So it would be like
a little bit of homework.
No, it's not, but also
they have
I don't know.